AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today. Busy, busy. I'll get to the orange clown car in the White House and this whole thing with Iran and what he's done there, because that is just dumb beyond dumb. Later on, I've got a great interview scheduled up with Gary Kounanen. He has written the book Flames of Discontent, the 1916 Minnesota Iron Ore Strike. It's an amazing book, actually. It talks about not only the labor uprising on the Iron Range in 1916, which was a huge strike, but also the impacts of that strike, which ended up leading into the labor movement and the big fights that they had in downtown Minneapolis. We'll talk to him a little bit later about his book. It's a very good book. Hunter, how are you today? It's good to talk to you, my friend.
I'm great.
We do want to make sure I mention Brett's birthday is today. How old is that young man?
33.
Dear God, really?
He's
not 73? What, are you sure? Yeah, what happened to him?
He's still not in our prime listener demographic.
He is. Brett, happy birthday to you. He runs a lot of the station here. He's a great guy, and a big happy birthday from Hunter, myself, and everyone here at AM 950. Democrat of the day, and if you're looking at the live stream feed, it's Radio for Your Eyes at the Facebook page, am950radio.com. You'll see me holding up our brand new graphic on this. Nicely done, Hunter. Democrat of the day, we're welcoming in from District 23A, the DFL endorsed candidate is Heather Clausen, and she's kind enough to join us right now to talk about her race. Heather, thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Explain to everyone out there, who is Heather Clausen?
Okay, well, that is a loaded question. like I said, my name is Heather Clausen. As you mentioned, I'm the recently DFL-endorsed candidate here in District 23A. I'm a Jackson, Minnesota native, grew up here, graduated from high school here in 1993, and decided to move back to the area after I graduated from college because I wanted to raise my own family here in an area that I love, in a district that I love, because I love the values that we have here in southern Minnesota.
Now, let's explain to everyone, where is 23A? What cities are located in 23A?
Okay, so 23A is along the I-90 corridor in the southern part of Minnesota. So we have Jackson, Fairmont, Blue Earth, Winnebago, and a few other cities in between, a little bit of Watonwan County as well.
It's a lovely part of the state. I've been down there a few times, and just it's one of those places where there is a very peaceful farm quality of life, which you really can't can't make up. You got to kind of go down a place like 23A because it really is this beautiful part of the country, and you know, it's you're surrounded by agriculture and you're surrounded by small towns and this great rural lifestyle. It is a wonderful place. I can easily see why you'd move back to some place like that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, we have a real sense of community here in District 23A. You see all the time when, you know, farmers, for example, if you have someone who has taken ill or gotten sick, the neighbors rally up together just like in the old days and help them, you know, bring in their harvest, bring in their crops. That's the one thing that I love is the sense of community here and the sense that we kind of take care of each other.
What prompted you? What you know, one day you got up and said, you know what, I'm going to run as the DFL candidate in 23A. What was your motivation?
Well, I've been asked that a lot, and there's a lot of answers to that question. What it all boils down to, though, is I really care about our district. I care about Minnesota. I had a lot of discontent over the 2016 election, just like a lot of people did. My husband and I spent a lot of time kind of complaining about the negativity, the divisiveness, those kinds of things. And he really kind of planted the seed in my head, my husband, Tim, that we should get involved and we should do something instead of just complaining. So that's where it started, kind of on the local level. Decided to go to our county DFL meeting, get involved, and it kind of grew from there. I don't know, I don't even remember if there was a specific moment, but it's just something that kind of grew in our interactions with people. And, you know, I was lucky to meet some fantastic DFLers who kind of shaped me along the way. And so that's kind of how we got here today.
What are, you know, if you do go to St. Paul, what is the issues that you want to champion while you're there for 23A?
My number one issue is healthcare, hands down. I've been doing a ton of door knocking, last fall, and again have started up here in the spring. Hit about 500 doors last weekend in Fairmont. And healthcare is the number one issue that we see. I am a health insurance agent. I've worked in health insurance for 15 years, and that's, you know, I was around before the Affordable Care Act. I'm a MNsure certified broker. And so healthcare for me is a real personal issue. I work with people every single day. I see the good things that are happening, and I see the bad things that are happening.
Well, and it's what's interesting, Heather, about that is that, and by the way, once again, I think the most unifying issue out there, I don't care where you're at in the state, healthcare is this promise that there was going to be, if Trump gets elected, the Republicans were cheering because there's going to be cheaper and better healthcare. The only way they could have done that off the Affordable Care Act was to give us a single-payer system. They were never intending on doing that. And right now, we're having the discussion, and it's hard to even comprehend we're having this discussion, of bringing back, you know, stuff like pre-existing conditions and denying people health care because your kid was born with cancer. It stinks to be him. I mean, that's not America, and that is not, you know, a quality of life that we were promised as citizens here. And I think that we all can unite on that this is, we need to have a healthcare system. It's a great healthcare system. It's not access. It's not the quality of the healthcare. It's accessibility and affordability, which is driving most people away from getting good quality healthcare.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I sat across my desk many times in the years before the Affordable Care Act and had to tell people that they didn't qualify for health insurance.
Wow.
Because they had asthma, because they had a heart condition, maybe they had cancer and lost their job and didn't have their employer coverage anymore. We do not want to go back to those days.
And when you're talking about a district like yours, I mean, obviously another major issue is senior care, not only health care, but transportation issues. You have an aging population that needs to be addressed. Their issues need to be addressed. I imagine that's something you're hearing a lot about as well.
Yeah, rural health care is really, really important. You know, our cities can't stay in existence without health care, especially with our farmers and things like that around here. So not only do we see it for elderly, but we also see it for mental health issues. And I know that's something that Paul Wellstone was a big champion of. And we have a critical lack of access for mental health facilities, especially for adolescents in rural Minnesota.
Bob Gunther is the current Republican, I believe, down there. The Republicans have promised for years, and this is an issue I know that's near and dear to you probably, broadband. They have promised broadband access through the state. This was an issue they themselves brought up in 2006, 2008, 2010. You know, put us in power, we'll get you broadband. We have tried to get broadband out of the Republicans. Republicans have zero intent on delivering broadband. You talk about healthcare, we can talk about education, we can talk about, you know, business development. I imagine for you, broadband's another major issue that you'd like to see in 23A.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, I can personally vouch for the fact that our internet service down here is sketchy. I live on an acreage. We're outside of town about 10 miles. My son would rather connect the PS4 through his cell phone data.
Wow.
Than through our internet, because he can't stream anything. He can't play his, you know, play his games. So I know how upsetting that is for a 12-year-old. I can't imagine how upsetting it is for a business owner.
And how many parents are out there that have to take their kid to a coffee shop, you know, two towns over, because so they can get Wi-Fi so they can do homework that evening?
Exactly. Or just, you know, even talking about bringing kids back. You know, we want people to come back to their hometowns after college. They're not going to do that if they can't telecommute here, if they can't do their work here. Even our farming operations rely so much now on the internet and broadband. If we want to keep people here, we've got to improve that.
There are some farming states that do understand that, and they, you know, you talk about the tractors, and you get out in there, and they're the hookups they have there with the data, you know, with moisture, productivity, the crop production that they're getting out as they harvest. I mean, that's information they need to get back to the co-op instantly. Some states have figured that out and said, hey, well, we get a broadband everywhere. The farmer even gets benefited from this because it gives them real-time results from as they harvest in the fields. And we just, for some reason, this doesn't seem to be a thing that the Republicans are interested in. But I imagine that it's something that you would love to see, as you mentioned, you would love to see and get happening if you were to get to St. Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to do it with partnerships, you know, between the states, between these companies, between these businesses. And between the citizens themselves, I think once people see how beneficial it is, it's really a no-brainer.
I imagine there's also probably some talk here. I mean, the last I heard, the Chinese have stopped buying American soybeans of all types. They're not buying American soybean oil, soybean products. I know sorghum is another crop that they are starting to turn away. And it's not a trade embargo. It's just they're encouraging their local businesses not to buy American products, mm-hmm. to buy it from Argentina, buy it from China, from Brazil, from India. I imagine that's something that's weighing heavy. I know that there's a lot of people in that district that voted for Trump, but I don't think they voted for this kind of thing where there'd be a crop embargo against their main product.
No, I think it's a huge wake-up call going on right now. I mean, the farm margins are so tight down here anyway. Farmers have been struggling for the past few years with just really low margins and things like that. And this is going to cripple some of our family farms who are already just really fighting to hold on.
Well, and you talk about what was the margins I saw? It's like they, you know, your after work take home pay is like $27,000. I mean, for the amount of work you're doing, I mean, that's not a lot. I mean, that we should need to increase the quality of life that the farmer is getting. But as well, you know, it's just, you know, you can't when they're clearing $27,000-$28,000 a year, you can't be making their job harder.
No, that's right. That's right. And, you know, one thing I think that we need to do a better job of here in Minnesota, and we've been kind of a leader on it, but I think we need to expand, is really looking into continuing with renewable energy. I live right in the middle of a huge wind farm down here, and it has been very, very positive for farmers. My brother-in-law is a third-generation family farmer, worked with the wind power companies, created jobs here. And I think solar is even going to overtake wind as our next kind of a savior here in southern Minnesota.
And the great thing for communities in 23A and communities across the state is it's relatively self-sufficient. You're not having to deal with some mega corporation. You can set up solar array and basically have that local power going to your local consumer. I mean, it's a win across the board.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. It's something that I think can really save us and really fortify our farms down here.
Heather Clausen, 23A is the district. I imagine now that it's nice, now that we're not having 8 inches of snow every weekend, I imagine you're getting out and doing some of the door knocking and talking to the people in the community, correct?
Yep, that's what we've been doing. I started my campaign about a year ago, got a really nice head start. So it was a really great way. Last fall, I was able to door knock all registered voters in 5 of our small communities. We've resumed now. That the weather is nice out. Through the winter, I committed to attend a meeting in every city council, county commissioner, and school board in our district. That's 26 cities, 9 school districts, and 4 counties. So I've filled my winter with meeting all of our local officials, which has been very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine as well, you're meeting a lot of Democrats who might not have been that interested in politics before now, but are getting it's time to dust off the old the protest signs or the voter's card or whatever. Yep. It is. They're looking to get involved this time around, correct?
Yeah, the energy here is really fantastic. And I would say it's not just Democrats, but there are Republicans also who have reached out to me. So there is some discontent in the Republican Party as well, even though they may try to hide it a little bit. My goal is to be welcoming to those Republicans. I want them to know that I want to support them as well. And you know, we really need to be the party that's inclusive. It's so easy to be angry. It's a lot harder to start conversations with people rather than arguments, but I think that's what we as Democrats need to do.
And once again, when you start that discussion and you start explaining what the Democrats are doing, I think a lot of people, even the Republicans, are like, oh, yeah, that actually sounds like a good idea. And they don't realize they've, for the most part, been voting against their best interests as they've kept a Republican majority in the Minnesota House, Minnesota Senate.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I think once you can connect with people on values, the issues aren't as important as connecting with people on values. We may come from things with different ideas. Our issues may be different, but the value itself is the same, whether you're Republican or Democrat. You want safety. You want prosperity. You want, you know, care for your family and things like that. So we just have to find a way to bridge that gap.
Clausen4mn.com. It's KLASSENFORMN.com is the website. I'm sure you're looking for donations, volunteers, people that are willing to help you in 23A, correct?
Yep, that would be fantastic. The fundraising is my least favorite part of running for office, but it's unfortunately a necessary evil. So yes, donations and volunteers too, because we do have a large district geographically. I think we have 12 parades that we're registered for this summer, so we need walkers, door knockers, even people just to write letters.
Absolutely. So if you can volunteer, and that's something I'm saying, help your local Democrat, all right? That's great. But I want you to pick five Democrats across the state in districts that are currently held by Republicans, and I want you to go down and help them. It's summertime, a great chance to go down to a beautiful 23A, go down and see the community, help out Heather, find five. Heather Clausen is a great option for you. Clausen4MN, K-L-A-S-S-E-N-F-O-R-M-N. That's the website. Heather, I'll make sure we post everything up online tomorrow, and I hope you all the best. Once again, it's a great part of the state, and it's, you know, it'd be great to see a Democrat holding 23A.
Oh, thank you so much. I think we can do it here. I think this might be our year.
Heather Clausen, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, Heather.
Thank you.
Take care. Heather Clausen, Spotlighter. It's a Spotlight interview for sure. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Damian Strange, Executive Director of Northeast Minneapolis Arts Association, NEMA, and I'm personally inviting you to Arterworld May 18th through the 20th. View artwork of over 650 artists in every medium at more than 50 locations throughout Northeast Minneapolis, including studio buildings, art galleries, homes, storefronts, and local businesses. The Artist Open Studio Tour may include demonstrations, mini workshops, installations, and special exhibitions. Studio tours offer a great opportunity to ask questions, discuss techniques, experience art firsthand, and purchase unique artwork directly from artists. Arterworld gives you a unique opportunity to meet the artists who make our community so vibrant and invest in our art community by purchasing artwork that you connect with. For more information, go to NEMAA.org. That's NEMA.org. Looking forward to seeing you at Arterworld.
With spring, it's car wash season. Thank goodness for the Luther Advantage program from Rudy Luther Toyota. Not only do I save 10 cents off per gallon of gas at holiday station stores, but I also get big discounts on car washes. And with free 2 years of maintenance with every new Toyota purchased, I can get my oil change and spring service done with the best service and maintenance department at Rudy Luther Toyota. Clear your spring checklist with great service from Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Robert Barile here. Looking to add some comedy to your Saturday nights? Tune in to Laughing Matters right here on AM 950 at 7 p.m. to join myself, along with the funniest comedians in the Twin Cities, for an hour of topical social commentary and blatant self-promotion. Laughing Matters is brought to you by Stand Up Records, the recording label of the best comedians in the country, from Doug Stanhope to Hannibal Buress. Visit them online at www.standupcrap.com.
The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Dan is in Minneapolis, wanted to chime in on something. Welcome on in, Dan.
Hey, Matt. Hey, I just did tune in late to the lady that you had on there. I guess
Heather Clausen. Heather Clausen, 23A.
Okay, yeah, Heather Clausen. What are her ideas that would be different than what has already been the platform of the Democratic Party of burdensome taxes and income tax and property tax, sales tax.
Yeah, get them, man. Get them, man.
Gender confusion.
All right. Oh, Dan. You know, here's what I'm going to say. You know what she's for? Not torpedoing the soybean industry to where every farmer is going under. That's what she's for. She's for broadband, something the Republicans have promised for years. But instead, they keep giving tax cuts to the wealthiest of wealthy and the big corporations. Not you. Dan, you're not getting a tax cut from the Republicans. As a matter of fact, this new little stunt Trump pulled with the Iranians pretty much is going to burn up all your any disposable income you have with the gas price increase we're about to see. You know what she's for? She's for health care that's not going to, I know you must, Dan, this must be the best day of your life when you can tell a sick two-year-old and their parents, you have to die because the health care is not going to be affordable. Ha! In your face. You know, that's why she wants to solve that. She wants the two-year-old to live. She wants the two-year-old to live and not be bankrupt for the rest of their life because they were, God forbid, born with a health problem. That's what she's for. She's for caring about the community and not just money. Money's the most important thing. Money, 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 money. Like you are. Like you seem to be, Dan. No, she's for reminder, Dan, if you weren't paying attention here, Tim Pawlenty left the state in a $6 billion hole. And that didn't include the education budget, which he shifted into a different fiscal cycle to avoid it being on the bill. Mark Dayton put in common sense tax code, which did raise the taxes on the wealthiest people, but made Minnesota the best freaking state in the country. But no, you want to go back. You must love, Dan, taking all the money out of your wallet and just, why don't you, as a matter of fact, Dan, why don't you do this? Why don't we just get rid of the government as a whole? Why don't you go to your bank accounts today, withdraw all your money out of your car, sell your house, and then I want you to go find the biggest house on Lake Minnetonka, okay? One of the big ones, okay? And I want you to take all your money and go to their front door and put it on their doorstep and say, you deserve it. Now my life is going to be so much better. It's going to be so much better. Here's all my money. Here's all my worldly possessions. Thank God I just gave them to you. Because that's exactly what the Republicans are doing. You're just eliminating the middleman. And if you look at me and say, well, I'd never do that, then why are you tolerating it from the Republicans? Huh? Because that's what they're doing. If you really love Republican tax policy, then what I want you to do is I want you just to eliminate the middleman. Go take your wallet, whatever in your wallet, go find the wealthiest, go into downtown Minneapolis, go into one of the big buildings, find the CEO or the president or the executive of the large corporation, walk into there, take every dollar you have in your wallet, and there you go, sir. It's all yours. And feel really proud of yourself. We'll all call you an idiot because it seems pretty stupid to do something like that. As opposed to, I don't know, helping the community, feeding the hungry, giving a good education to all kids, taking care of sick grandparents. You know, those pesky things. But sure, tell me more about your liberals want to raise my taxes. I got news for you. The Republicans are raising your taxes, and they're just not giving you anything back in return. They're just giving that money to the wealthy. So good luck with that. Jim is in St. Paul. Welcome on in, Jim.
Thank you, Matt. You know, I called in. I want to talk about this Iranian deal, but that guy that you just talked to, he's a perfect example of a loudmouth know-nothing who, if he'd look at the policies that the Republicans are following now, they're giving us absolutely no government at all. You are totally right in what you said as far as, you know, the rich getting everything. But the thing I wanted to talk about on this Iran deal, did you happen to watch his speech?
I saw part of it. And as a matter of fact, Jim, can I tell you what? I appreciate the call. I appreciate the information. Here's what I want to do. Thanks for the call. We're going to take a break. I'm going to come back because I got to make some time here for once again. Gary Kaunin is joining us. Flames of Discontent is his book. That author is going to come up here in a little bit. But I do want to talk about Trump and the Iranian deal. That's coming up after the break. 952-946-6205. Because Jim's right. There was a doozy in that speech that you got to hear. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
It's a great day for a bike ride. What's that? You can't find your bike? Oh, it has a flat. No problem. take it to Nokomis Cycle, the hardest working bike shop in town. They're celebrating their 23rd year in business. In that time, they've mastered the art of friendly, dependable service. So keep life and your bike moving with Nokomis Cycle, working harder to make you go faster. Nokomis Cycle at the corner of 46th and Bloomington Avenue South in Minneapolis or at NokomisCycle.com.
This is Dan Brooks, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with RBC Wealth Management. For the past 19 years, I've been managing wealth for individuals, institutions, and corporate retirement plan sponsors. Throughout my career, I have seen common traits in successful investors. They include the courage to be diversified, the willingness to work with a professional, the discipline to follow a plan, and patience. I welcome the opportunity to help contribute to your financial success. Call me at 612-371-2396.
Mother's Day in the Twin Cities means Mother's Day Buffet at the Park Tavern. On May 13th, treat mom to herb-crusted beef with béarnaise sauce, tortellini with champagne cream sauce, grilled salmon with pesto, eggs benedict, breakfast and lunch sides, appetizers, salads, and desserts. Mom even gets a free mimosa and a carnation. Seatings are from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. $21.95 for adults, seniors are $14.95, kids are $10.95, and 5 and under are free. And don't forget the hour of free bowling. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, Sunday the 13th, enjoy Mother's Day with the Park Tavern.
Hi, this is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design, and I'd like you to tune in to a new program, Drink in the Style. Sundays at 5 p.m., Drink in the Style is going to be a one-hour conversation about interior design and aesthetics, all while enjoying a cocktail created by a local mixologist. Drink in the Style, Sundays at 5 p.m., brought to you by Habitation Furnishing and Design.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Hunter Haas. Today, showers likely, thunderstorms also possible after 4 p.m., cloudy with a high near 78. Wednesday, chance of showers with a high near 68, and Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 65. Eat Local Minnesota is a great way to find locally owned Minnesota restaurants featuring high-quality food and unique eating experiences. Stop by and visit Lowry Hill Meats, Burger Mo's, Great Wall, or Victor's 1959 Cafe. For a full list of restaurants, visit eatlocalminnesota.com.
Sweep the leg, Johnny! Sweep the leg, Johnny! All Republican trolls, you've become a member of Cobra Kai. That's all I'm gonna say. Get him, man! Get him! 952-946-6205. Reminder that it is Mother's Day on... on the 13th, coming up here on Sunday. If you, of course, are looking for a great place to take mom for a lovely meal, eatlocalminnesota.com is the restaurant of the week. All of them are featured. Eatlocalminnesota.com, restaurant of the week. Every single restaurant. You'll find a great one near you. Get reservations. I do recommend you get reservations today. Many of these restaurants might do special hours or special meals on Mother's Day, so make sure you call ahead, find out what's available, and get your reservations now. Enjoy Mother's Day with eatlocalminnesota.com, 952-946-6205. Now, what really gave up the ghost in regard to Trump's motivation for getting out of the Iranian nuclear deal is that he was asked a simple question afterwards. He was asked an incredibly simple question after he got us out of the detail. He couldn't answer, how does this make America safer? Now, I want to repeat that question. How does this make America safer? You have been talking about getting out of the Iranian deal for 2 years. The day that you do it, you can't answer the question of how exactly this makes America safer. You can't. You should be able to very quickly say the reason this deal was bad is because of this. And when asked this question, he didn't have an answer. He sat there for about 5 seconds, kind of looked stupid. Well, he looked like Trump. And after 5 seconds, he basically said, this is going to make America safer. And then turned and walked away because he could not answer the question. Because this is not about making America safer. This is because Obama did it. He said, oh, we're going to stop them from making nuclear weapons or nuclear reactors. We're going to stop them from doing this. Well, if you wanted to stop them, you should have kept the, you see the treaty you just ripped up? The treaty you just ripped up had stopped them. They were not building nuclear weapons. The Israelis and their little dog and pony show that they were putting out, that was all information from pre-2003, for goodness sakes. The only country on the planet that thinks what we did today was good is Israel. And the reason why Israel thinks this is good is because they desperately want to fight a war with Iran. But the reality is they're even smart enough to not do it with their own military because they would lose half their forces trying to even accomplish it. So what he's trying to do is get America to go and send a few of their 100,000 of their soldiers on in to get them killed so Benjamin Netanyahu can walk over American bodies and plant the Israeli flag in the middle of Tehran. That's what he wants. He wants the Americans to do the dirty work for him. And Trump, just because Obama did it, and from everything I've heard, that's what the people that wanted this deal done, that's all they kept repeating to him was, Obama signed it, Obama signed it, Obama signed it. And he hates Obama. For God's sakes, look what he did in the hotel room in Russia, allegedly. He hates Obama. And so this had nothing to do with making America safer. This had nothing to do with better foreign policy. This was just because Obama did it, he undid it. And now what motivation does Iran have to work with us? What? Seriously, what motivation? What? None. You know, he's just, and it's not, you know, it's not a lie. He's still trying to put forward this lie that he himself has caused peace on the Korean Peninsula. The only reason there is peace on the Korean Peninsula is because he is such a buffoon and he looks so out of control and he looks so belligerent at what he does that even Kim Jong-un was like, dude, that guy's crazy. I'll tell you what, I'll work with the South Koreans and the Chinese on my own. The United States hasn't done any of this. This has all been the Chinese and the South Koreans. But whatever. I mean, he likes to do make-believe, I guess. This is a joke. This is a joke. And today, not only is our gas prices are going to go up, not only is this country less safe, the world is less safe because Trump just hates Obama that much that he threw a temper tantrum and basically got us out of a treaty that had actually stopped Iran from making nuclear weapons. We had actually stopped them, and here we are. 952-946-6205. By the way, thank you very much to Todd Colad. Todd is sponsoring AM 950 Radio. You can, too, if you go to am950radio.com or go to call us 952-946-8885. You can sponsor the radio station, just like Todd, who lives over in Spain, loves listening to us. We have a lot of listeners out around the world. Thank you very much for that. Just Folk is his band. Not only can you see their video on the Twitter and the Facebook stream, but, of course, Bandcamp, they have their music. Todd Colad and Just Folk. When we come on back, we'll be talking about the Iron Range strike. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive in New Brighton. I've been in business long enough to know that if you want to stand out, you better be the best. That's why I've assembled a top-notch team of automotive specialists who do the job right the first time. Bringing your car or truck to PJW Automotive is an investment in the future of your vehicle. Try us once and you'll see it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Guess who called me the other day? You did. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld of Computer Revolution in Roseville. I want to thank AM 950 listeners who called to thank us for supporting the station. So here's an offer exclusive to 950 listeners. Bring your broken computer or cell phone to our Roseville store, say I'm an AM 950 listener, and you'll receive $20 off any repair. Computer Revolution with cell phone repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. And thanks.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 on Monday mornings at 7:30. This Monday, I'll talk about Dr. Megan Coffey, who interrupted a promising medical career to tend to the poorest of the poor in Haiti following the 2010 earthquake that killed 160,000. But you won't find a Wikipedia page about this idealist. She's the most modest, under-the-radar person I've highlighted thus far in my shows. Ellie 2.0 on AM 950.
As a family-owned business, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has been serving the Twin Cities since 1930. A new furnace or air conditioner from Standard Heating and Air can lower your monthly utility bills, administer more consistent temperatures, and even improve indoor air quality, making your home safer and healthier for the whole family. The average heating and cooling system lasts 15 to 20 years, so if yours is on its last legs, call Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Learn more at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Gary Countinen is the author of Flames of Discontent, the 1916 Minnesota Iron Ore Strike. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about his book. Gary, thank you very much for the time.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity.
My pleasure, actually, and congratulations on the book. Now, my family has a history in the iron range up there. My great-grandfather actually was one of the foremen of one of the mines up there. So anytime I get something like this, I love talking about it because there is such a rich, deep history there with the discovery of the iron ore and then the communities that sprung up around the range that brought in a tremendous immigrant population that ended up being one of the major forces of the labor movement in this country.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. It's a very rich history. It's a history unlike most histories in Minnesota, and especially rural Minnesota. So, you know, it's quite interesting that also a lot of folks have roots up here that live down in the Twin Cities area. Mining is a boom-bust cycle, and in a number of the bust cycles you had at various times, people moving down to the Twin Cities. So when I came down to the Twin Cities and done some presentations, I always kind of ask, you know, how many of you folks have some type of roots or heritage up on the Iron Range? And, you know, the number's always pretty impressive.
Let's take some time here to kind of explain what was the working conditions that led up to this. I mean, if anyone's ever done the Tower Mine tour, it is a pretty stark reminder of, you know, this was not exactly a pleasant work experience for many of these people. It was really tough. And this was something that even though that the industry had been there for a little bit, was really kind of developing, there was still quite a bit of labor issues, correct?
Yes. And probably the number one issue, you brought up immigrants, and the number one issue is that the unskilled labor, so the people that were doing the most difficult and deadly jobs were immigrants, and they had absolutely no voice in the conditions of their labor because they couldn't vote, of course. Most of them couldn't vote. That naturalization process took a while, and sometimes folks didn't naturalize. So, you know, they didn't have a voice on the job because there were no unions, and they didn't have a voice in their community. And the communities were really kind of dominated by mining companies as well. So it was really kind of a voiceless group of people that were being exploited in many instances, and there was no recourse for them.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as some of the work sites in like Pennsylvania, where the company town really just ruled everything. There was some, there were the beginnings of things that was there, but I mean, it really was the mining companies did still, for the most part, rule over all.
Yeah, and it wasn't as overt as what was going on in, say, Appalachia or some other areas, but it was a little kind of covert in many ways, because not only did managers and the higher ups in the mining companies, not only did they kind of dictate what you were doing at work, but also in your daily lives, because they owned, oftentimes, if you had a house, you were renting it from the mining company, mm-hmm. so they could evict you on notice. Many of the school boards or the city councils or the village councils, those say mining companies, so those same people that you kind of reported to or were under at the mine were also kind of dictating what your life was like, because they sat on a lot of the boards and important organizations. So, you know, there was really no escaping that influence.
What was specific about what happened in 1916 at the St. James Mine in Aurora? Why did that one become such a linchpin in the labor movement?
Well, it's interesting because that, and I don't know, you know, folks who've done 1916 strike stuff or early labor stuff, I don't think they kind of understand that this particular strike was really a grassroots strike. The IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, who ended up kind of administering the 1916 strike, they did not want to go on strike. They didn't want the rank and file to go on strike. But the IWW is a kind of a rank and file organization, and there was this upswell because of poor pay, deadly working conditions, and, you know, they went on strike. So the IWW was really trying to catch up with what was started at the grassroots level here up on the Iron Range. And so that was kind of unique in regards to the strike. The other thing that was really unique in regards to the strike was that it was a real kind of coalescing of ethnic groups. In 1907, there was a strike up on the Iron Range as well, not nearly as big, but it was led mostly by Finnish immigrants and Italian immigrants. In fact, the leader of the 1907 strike was an Italian immigrant. And that strike didn't go so well because mining companies brought in roughly about 1,000 South Slavic people from Croatia, Slovenia, Macedonia, Bosnia, that area, brought in South Slavic workers or scabs to break the strike. And so from about 1907 on, there was a lot of ethnic animosity between these three groups.
I was going to say, it's interesting because we talked to another author about the rise of the Scandinavian population, and he sort of echoed the same thing. The Finns really were a main catalyst for this. I mean, their labor policies and what they wanted to see as labor goes were really progressive for the time. But there was that lack of trust between the immigrant groups, which really hindered any real successful organization within the labor organization, because of the fact that, you know, I don't mind fighting for other Finnish rights or Italian rights or Slavic rights. It was, you know, it was, I'm just not going to fight for anyone else.
Right. And race is, you know, we have to, you know, go back, you know, roughly 100 years. Race is really a social construct. So when people were coming through Ellis Island and immigrating, your race at that time, if you were one of those ethnic groups from Finland or Italy or Sweden or wherever, that was your race. If you look back on some immigration reports coming in, they'll list race as the country that you came from. And, you know, so it was, that was, folks from Finland or folks from Italy were a different race, and that played out. There were ethnic institutions. You didn't do a lot of mixing ethnically, and so there was a Finnish church and a Finnish bar, an Italian church, an Italian bar. That's why there are so many bars. Many of you ever been up to up to the Iron Range? You know, there's a bar on Gilbert is a really good example. You go through downtown Gilbert, you go bar. You know, flower shop bar, you know, whatever. But all of those bars are there because they were for the different ethnic groups. So if you were a South Slavic worker or Croatian, that's a bar you drank at. You didn't go hang out with the Finns in their bar. So that was really the largest or biggest kind of challenge for the IWW, was to get all of those ethnic groups kind of thinking in along the same lines. And it, you know, language was a separator, culture was a separator. So it was quite the big challenge for the IWW.
The strike, talk about how big the strike eventually got.
Massive. There were anywhere from between 10 to 15,000 people that were idled up on the range. Mining company estimates are quite a bit lower, but I think what the mining company was doing was kind of estimating how many people had joined the IWW. And so maybe in some ways the IWW was attempting to just bring people out. They didn't have 10 to 15,000 people join and swell their ranks, but they did idle or, you know, have people stop working at the number of about 10 to 15,000. And so if you can imagine, you know, that number of people, you know, take a town of about 10 or 15,000 people and all of those people stop working, that kind of gives you the scope and size of not only the working population at the time on the range, but also just kind of the wave of passion that kind of came across the range and that was kind of in the streets of the Iron Range as well, because a lot of these people were, of course, doing strike parades, mm-hmm. holding massive rallies and that type of thing.
Gary Conan and is joining us with Flames of Discontent, the 1916 Minnesota Iron Ore Strike. This got so big, the state got involved, and I just think about the comparisons you could make to what the government in the state of Minnesota was doing to help the mining companies. Reminds me a lot of when R.T. Rybak allowed the banks in downtown Minneapolis to put the window washer crews outside of their buildings during the 99% strike, the protests that were going on, to allow basically the banks to build a buffer zone around the banks to prevent, you know, protesters from getting near the banks. And it's funny because there does seem to be, I mean, that analogy taking the state kind of try to step in here and try to protect not only the mines and the strike, but also try to make this far more difficult, I think, when you think about it, in regards to potential for strikes in the future.
Oh, definitely. And the state government especially, and the main player at that time was Joseph Bernquist, who happened to be a Republican governor. You know, he was working in lockstep, if you want to use the term cahoots, because it's kind of a fun word to say. He was really in cahoots with the mining company. And that's one of the thing that maybe oftentimes that I would, as a labor historian, for people who are starting out in that field, don't limit yourself to archival research or research strictly from the labor perspective. Also get into company records, mm-hmm. because it just flummoxed me that the mining company would keep this. But I came across correspondence, letters back and forth between some mining company executives, and they are writing in there exactly, you know, the role that the Minnesota's governor at the time had in breaking the strike. And it was a really significant one, mm-hmm. because the idea was always to deport, from the beginning of the strike, to deport IWW organizers off the Iron Range. They had thought they'd organize a kind of a vigilante posse to, you know, get the people and run them out of town, get the IWW organizers and run them out of town. That didn't work. They tried other things. Finally, they went to the governor, and the governor made this decree that, you know, any IWW organizer that's caught doing such and such. Well, on July 3rd, that happened, and there was a shooting at the Masanovich boarding house. Mm-hmm. And that shooting involved four or five striking workers. And unfortunately, two people were killed in that shooting. And so not only did they arrest the people who were there in the boarding house at the time, the strikers in the boarding house at the time, they also arrested IWW organizers, a bunch of them, and kind of did a roundup. And then you look back in the historic record, and there's the mining company executives talking about getting the governor to make this decree and to getting him to kind of put his stamp on his stamp of approval on this plot to deport or get rid of the IWW on the Iron Range.
That's the story. It's John Oller, isn't it? Is that the story you're talking about with the Oliver Mining Company cops shooting him in his office? Or is that a different story?
That happens to be a different story. That wow. happened on June 22nd. There was a skirmish in the streets, and the mining companies had, some of them had really large, what they would call police forces. And these were different than county sheriffs, different than local city police. These were police forces that didn't have jurisdiction over anything except for mining company property. And, you know, they weren't sworn in peace officers. They were just there. It was like a security guard on steroids.
Yeah.
They didn't have any special rights of law enforcement or anything like that. And so when this shooting of John Oller happened, there was a skirmish between these mining company guards and folks who were off of mining company property. They lived in the city of Virginia, Minnesota. And so the mining company police shot, basically in the streets, shot one of the striking workers. They didn't have any authority to arrest, to detain, or certainly not to shoot anybody. But that fact apparently went unnoticed, because for shooting somebody down in the street, nobody ever faced even a trial. Nobody was even really arrested. There was an inquest done, but nobody was even arrested for shooting somebody down in the streets of Virginia.
And the Oliver Company cops quickly found, were trying to spin it their way very quickly, because they knew that that wasn't going to go well. But I mean, obviously, to find out more about this and read what I consider to be an incredibly well-researched book, I really encourage you to go get this, Flames of Discontent. This is from Gary Kaunanen at the 1916 Minnesota Iron Ore Strike. Gary, great work on this. And I think that this is so important, because as we talk about labor issues today, you have to see where we came from and how hard people fought, and sometimes being shot in the middle of the street to basically just try to get the rights to be able to have a decent way of life and a decent living. I think this is a great book for anyone that's interested in labor issues, and this is a must-have to have.
Well, thank you. And I would, you know, quickly point out that it's not only labor issues, but also the issue of immigration, because this is largely an immigrant story.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same, you know, it's 100 years later, of course, from when the strike took place, but some of those same issues that we're facing with organized labor and immigrants are the same things that we're facing today. The names and the faces and the ethnic groups have changed, but not all that much has changed in immigrant or organized or for the plight of organized labor. So that's what history teaches us. It teaches us that maybe history isn't all the time linear, but maybe it's kind of a circle, and some of the same things that were happening 100 years ago are happening today, and it gives us kind of a blueprint on at least how to acknowledge or be aware of the plight of others.
Flames of Discontent. Gary, a great work. And by the way, an absolutely spot on there, that the immigrant story is the story that you know, once again, is relatable from back then and today. Find the book. Once again, it's University of Minnesota Press. It is Flames of Discontent. Gary Kaunanen. Gary, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Matt, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All righty. We are going to be taking off. We got Mike McAtee. He's coming up next. Have a great afternoon. We'll be back on a Wednesday with Stein. Until then, see ya.